Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
I guess we should have expected this. There is so much pressure to get it right. And frankly, it's all over the map. I mean, every community across America is struggling with how to open schools.
So if a parent calls you and says, I could keep my kids home, I'd prefer to send them to school, what would you tell them?
By the way, it's not if, it's when, because I'm getting called all the time, actually, but from relatives and people I know and strangers.
During this pandemic, we have often turned to Dr. Erwin Redletter to help with the most difficult of our questions. So parents, listen up. This week on 880 In-Depth, the challenge of schooling our kids in the middle of a pandemic. I'm Tim Scheld from WCBS News Radio 880. Erwin Redletter has spent his life working to protect the health of children. A pediatrician by trade, Redletter is co-founder of the Children's Health Fund, an organization that helps vulnerable, at-risk children grow and thrive. Today, some of his most important work comes under the banner of the National Center for Disaster Preparedness at the Earth Institute at Columbia University. The coronavirus has seen an intersection of Dr. Redletter's life work, children's health, and disaster preparedness. He has helped advise New York City officials on topics just like reopening schools. There may be no more important subject than schools in the COVID era. With the best of intentions, we all seem to be struggling mightily. That's why we got on the phone with Dr. Redletter this week to ask him about New York's plans to reopen schools for at least some in-person learning. It is the controversy that everyone's talking about. Our Peter Haskell with Dr. Erwin Redletter.
Well, I am very concerned about a potential second wave and happening in New York. And I think that the possibility of getting kids in classrooms provoking a second wave in a big way in New York City is obviously possible. If that happens, we'd have to potentially close the schools shortly after reopening them, and I think that would be pretty traumatic. I would be in favor of waiting until we have more safeguards in place to try to reduce the possibility of a school-based outbreak.
If kids go into the classroom, describe the risk.
Well, we've been living in a bubble for the last 6 months where children basically have been staying at home and surrounded by their nuclear family for the most part. And as soon as we get kids back into classrooms, there's going to be a whole additional risk of children spreading the coronavirus among their classmates. And that is something that is almost unavoidable, even if we do what we need to do at the minimum, which is to make sure that you're separated, make sure that people are wearing masks, make sure that we have taken care of teachers who might be at high risk because they're older or have pre-existing conditions. The big issue that I think we have not addressed sufficiently is the necessity for making sure that there's good ventilation in each and every classroom that we intend to use. And this is a big problem, because if we don't have the ventilation, we have the possibility of the virus lingering in the air and being inhaled by other students and teachers and so on. And in New York City, like many other big cities, there are many schools that are older with very dysfunctional ventilation systems and not enough money to actually get those fixed. So I think I'd like to be assured that that we've done whatever needs to be done to make sure the ventilation is working properly in any classroom that's going to welcome children.
So it sounds like there's really nothing the city could do based on the ventilation issues you referred to that would make you comfortable seeing students in the classroom.
I don't think that every classroom's got a ventilation problem. I think some do. There's some classrooms in basements, for example. There are some classrooms with windows that haven't been opened in 20 years. So I think this would require a real investigation of the status of the ventilation systems, and just going through a checklist to say these classrooms are okay and these other ones are not. And for the ones that are not, they either have to not be used for teaching or they have to have their ventilation systems upgraded. So I think it's not out of the question. It just takes time, and I'd rather see that happen the inspections happen before kids are back in the classes.
Have you spoken to the mayor about this?
I have.
What is his response to what you say?
The mayor has been very receptive to input from me and other experts, and I think that's good. There's also a lot of pressure on the mayor, like every other mayor, to get kids back to school. Although we are the only big city school system that is not going full remote. And I think there's reasons why the mayor doesn't want to go full remote, and that has to do with the fact that a lot of children who live with families that are financially stressed may not have access to the internet, they may not have the hardware, and they may not have people in the household who can mentor children in going remote. Last year in the spring, there were large numbers of high school students, for instance, who never made use of remote access to learning. And I think of the 1.1 million children in New York City's public school systems, there are many who do not have access to be able to learn remotely. And that's a problem, especially for children who are in borderline situations to begin with from an educational point of view. It's very important that they get back in a routine of learning and that we help them catch up for time that's been lost when they've been out of school. So there are a lot of competing issues, and the people, children who are in families where there's working parents or essential workers, those workers have to go to work every day. That means that if their children are not in school every day, then they have to find some alternative arrangements for daycare and looking after the children while they're working. So there's a lot of economic and educational reasons to want to get the kids back in the classrooms. And I think this is what's on the mayor's mind.
So if a parent calls you and says, I could keep my kids home, I'd prefer to send them to school, what would you tell them?
By the way, it's not if, it's when, because I'm getting called all the time, actually, from relatives and people I know and strangers. And the question, when parents ask the question, if it's truly an optional possibility for parents to keep their children at home, I would suggest they probably do until we get some more safeguards in the school, as I was talking about, and still we have more capacity to do rapid on-site testing for COVID. These things will come and we'll eventually get there, but I don't think we're quite ready yet, which is why if a parent can keep their kids home, I say that's probably a good idea. If they need to send their kids to school, I think it's up to the city to make sure that the parents can do that and feel secure that their kids will be safe.
How long do you think it'll take before you feel comfortable it's safe for most kids to be back in the classroom?
My preference in terms of when it'll be safe to send kids back to school is when the schools can assure us that they can maintain the physical distancing, that they can mandate masks, and that they can make sure that the ventilation systems are working properly in the classrooms that they intend to use. And I would further add in there that I would feel even more comfortable if we had rapid on-site testing for COVID that did not need to go to a laboratory. In other words, you could do it daily and make sure the kids are free of disease and that the faculty and staff are as well. That might take a couple of months. If we could do it, I would hold off until those things were in place.
Let me ask you this. What happens when we have a collision between COVID and the flu season?
Again, I don't think it's a question of if we have a collision between COVID still very active and the new influenza season. I think it's going to happen. And I think that's going to add to the general chaos because the symptoms can be very similar, of course, between the two. Some people get very sick from influenza and don't have COVID, and some people need to go to the hospital. There are fatalities associated with the typical seasonal flu. So we have the possibility of very serious problems and, again, overwhelming our healthcare system when we do have a peak of the flu season coincident with a peak of COVID in New York or any other place, really.
In terms of a potential second wave that you spoke about earlier, what is the likelihood of that if kids are not in school, and what is the likelihood if kids are in school?
In general, if you put children or anybody else in congregate environments day after day, the possibility of spread is much higher. And obviously, if we're isolated, we're staying at home, the likelihood of catching either COVID or seasonal flu is less. But this also applies not just to children in schools, but also to people in restaurants and bars and gyms and every other place where people might gather. And every year, well before we even heard of COVID, we would have outbreaks, serious outbreaks of influenza that could make people quite sick, and for the very young and very old could be diseases that were actually fatal. So the more separation, the less likely for communication and spread.
You are a pediatrician. At the beginning, we heard that children were not necessarily at risk for this illness. What have we learned, and how much are they at risk?
We have learned some very important things that more fully describe the risks that children face from COVID. And one of them is that young children can carry very high coronavirus loads in their front part of their nasal passages. And secondly, older children, teenagers, and so on, are able to carry and spread COVID at the same rate as adults do. They may not get as sick, but in terms of being carriers, that is definitely a reality. And there are a couple of big studies that have shown that older children are carriers, as are younger children, even though they may not get as sick. But we've had, I'd say at this point, close to 400,000 reported cases of COVID in children in the United States since the pandemic began here.
The rest of New York State has indoor dining. New York City does not. Do you think New York City should have indoor dining? And the other question that's related is college kids. We saw what happened in North Carolina. Can colleges open safely?
So, first of all, although the upstate restaurants have been opened, and they are not really having too much in the way of additional problems. They weren't having many problems to begin with compared to New York City. In New York City, for a variety of reasons, I am still in favor of keeping the indoor dining restricted. I think that's going to be probably the case for the near term here for certain. The other thing is that for college and university students, there have been very significant outbreaks now at the University of North Carolina in Chapel Hill, as well as Oklahoma State University, as well as other universities around the U.S. So, again, like the public schools, colleges and universities can be real hotbeds and spreader situations as far as the transmission of coronavirus. So we have to be very, very careful. And for colleges and universities here in New York and elsewhere, by the way, I am in favor of all remote. I know that it's problematic for university students who want to get the full experience of being on a college campus. We can't blame them for that, but the facts are the facts when it comes to COVID, and it's just not safe yet to put children back in university and college classrooms.
Based on testing or therapeutics or vaccine, is there any way to gauge or guess when we might get to our new normal?
The new normal is off in the distance right now, and it's hard to say when we're going to get there. And I think there's going to be certain things that change that won't come back. I think we'll do a lot more remote learning. We've learned to have a lot of meetings on various video platforms, and that will probably continue as well. And some of the things we know about preventing spread of disease during say influenza season, in terms of hand washing and all those other public health protocols, will need to be maintained for the long haul as well. But I think it's going to be a while. I think the vaccines, I don't think we'll see them available for mass use and distribution until well into 2021 at the earliest. Medications will come sooner rather than later for very sick people in hospitals. But we also need medications to prescribe to outpatients who may have COVID or COVID symptoms that would keep them from getting sicker. And we'll see those happening at some point as well, and that'll be very helpful. And, so there's developments in the wings, and it's hard to say when they'll all appear, but it's going to be a while, and I think people are going to have to get used to this very unusual reality that we're currently facing because of the pandemic.
Do you think it's possible or maybe likely that kids might not be in the classroom through this entire academic year?
It's hard to say what's going to happen with children in classrooms. If we start getting significant multiple outbreaks among children, or children bring it home to their communities and families and seeing an outbreak in the communities that's significant, we may have a series of starts and stops for the school year in terms of classroom. And at some point, somebody may say, listen, we're going to have to just call it a day and not have children back in classrooms for this academic year. I'm very much hoping that won't be the case. I think it probably won't be the case, but I think it will it will be very likely that we'll have a situation where there's some stops and starts to the school year.
This week, the UFT, the union representing New York City public school teachers and staff, called on New York's mayor to rethink the reopening of schools. They're actually threatening a job action, and they promised to go to court to defend their rights if the city doesn't adopt a new plan for reopening schools. This is what the union's looking for. Before any school opens, it must meet the following criteria. Schools must be stocked with cleaning supplies, PPE, and proper ventilation. Each school must have a clear plan of action and a COVID response team in place. And every single person, that's students and teachers, must be screened and have evidence that they do not have coronavirus before being allowed to enter a school building. That's what the union wants. The city is saying it's already developing a testing plan for staff, but nothing is in place yet. And students? Well, they would simply have their temperatures checked daily. We will watch this story. In Depth is a weekly podcast from WCBS News Radio 880. Executive producers are Peter Haskell and myself, Tim Sheld. Find us wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for 880 In Depth. We invite you to subscribe. And, as always, we ask that you be safe.
Vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2 times points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.